Dr. Warren Rizzo.
Mr. Speaker, my response will address the questions raised by members to understand the TALIS, or Teaching and Learning International Survey 2024 findings, and the current support systems and measures in place to manage teacher workload and well-being. May I have Mr. Speaker's permission to answer oral questions number 2 to 5 and written questions numbers 45 to 47 on today's order paper?
Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. My response will also cover related oral and written PQs set down for today and subsequent sittings. Sir, let me begin by affirming what our teachers believe in, that teaching is, at its heart, a profoundly human endeavour. A teacher's responsibility is significant as it involves nurturing students and shaping their future. Our teachers take great pride in their work and demonstrate a strong sense of professionalism and dedication. Our educators often go far beyond their formal duties because they see their students' growth and well-being as their responsibility. While we appreciate and applaud their passion, we also want to ensure that such commitment does not result in unsustainable workload for our teachers. Members asked about the teachers' role and how the ministry intends to support teachers with their non-teaching workload. Members also asked about the use of independent or externally verified studies to validate reported teacher workload hours, and if the ministry conducts regular checks of teacher workload. We recognise that teaching, like many professions, comes with its own set of challenges and stressors. The 2024 TALIS survey, which is a study run independently by the OECD, or Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, found that Singapore teachers reported longer working hours per week compared to the OECD average. These longer hours are reported because Singapore teachers spend their time differently from many of their OECD peers. While classroom teaching hours are shorter, our teachers spend time on other important activities such as lesson preparation, co-curricular activities, and professional development. These activities are critical to their effectiveness in providing holistic education for our students. TALIS, being the largest international teacher survey, is a useful benchmarking tool, but it has its limitations. It is conducted once every 6 years and surveys a representative sample of only our lower secondary teachers. In contrast, MOE internally monitors the workload of our teachers more regularly across all grade levels, so primary, secondary, JC, CI, through surveys, polls, and various forms of staff engagement. This allows us to track closely and develop a more holistic understanding of teacher workload trends and issues so that we can adjust our policies and programs as necessary. As we had said in a written PQ reply to this House on the 14th of October this year, our data shows that over the years, teacher workload has remained stable in terms of total hours at an average of 53 hours. However, we recognise that the complexity of a teacher's work has increased over the years. Members asked how MOE aims to address the longer working hours and stresses faced by our teachers. MOE adopts a range of measures to manage teachers' workload and to support their well-being, which we review regularly. First, MOE's Teacher Work Management Framework, or TWMF, provides our school leaders with a common set of principles and measures to guide equitable workload allocation, considering teachers' competencies and preferences. It emphasizes transparency, trust, and open communication in workload deployment. This is reviewed regularly in response to new developments. Second, technology and AI innovation. MOE is tapping on AI to help teachers work more efficiently and effectively. New AI and other tech tools in the Singapore Student Learning Space, or SLS, for example, support teachers to plan lessons as well as to mark, provide customized feedback, and analyze students' responses. Digital platforms like Parents Gateway have reduced time spent on administrative tasks, such as collecting consent forms and medical certificates. And while Singapore is one of the highest adoption rates amongst OECD education systems for using AI, we recognize that it does not immediately translate to reduced working hours. Teachers need time to be trained to use these tools, be comfortable using them, and to fully integrate these tools into their work practices. Third, enhance staffing support. On average, each school has about 85 teachers. In addition, each school is resourced with a team of allied educators performing functions such as counselling and working with students with special education needs. All schools have a dedicated administrative team overseeing general administrative matters, procurement, financial operations, and logistics support. We have been increasing such support. Over the last 10 years, we've doubled the number of allied educators across all schools from about 800 to 1,600, and also increased the number of administrative staff in each school from 6 then to around 9 today. Furthermore, schools have the flexibility to procure manpower services such as coaches, CCA administrators, and allied support for student well-being, as well as vendors to assist with administrative work, event management, and student programs. We will continue to review the number of non-teaching staff needed in schools to effectively support our teachers and our students. Fourth, system-level adjustments. When we introduce new policies and initiatives or make policy changes, it increases workload for a season, as schools and teachers need to be briefed, trained, and need time to adjust. Good change management is therefore key. MOE has given schools greater flexibility to pace the implementation of new systems-wide initiatives, including deferring them if necessary, in order to manage staff workload. Hence, schools could decide when they would implement major changes such as FSBB or full subject-based banding, as well as the EdTech Master Plan 2030, for instance. Fifth, protected time policies. All schools provide protected vacation time during school holidays to ensure that our teachers can rest and recharge. Across the four blocks of school holidays, teachers can get around 6 to 7 weeks of protected time and can take their vacation leave beyond the protected time if they do not have any work in school. MOE also refreshed the school-home partnership guidelines at the end of 2024 to avoid parent-staff communication after school hours, except for critical emergencies. It also states clearly that teachers do not need to give their personal mobile phone numbers to parents and students. This is to minimise the blurring of lines between work and personal time. Six, flexible work arrangements, or FWA. Since 2022, MOE has also provided guidelines on flexible work arrangements for school-based officers while maintaining the duty of care towards our students. This includes allowing teachers to report later at the start of school day or leaving earlier before the end of the school day if they have no lessons or duties. Teachers are also allowed to work from home on a day where they have no classes or duties requiring their presence in school. Teachers who are unable to take on the full workload can apply for part-time working arrangements. Seventh, well-being support. All schools have staff well-being committees that are resourced with staff welfare funds. Teachers have access to a range of resources such as well-being workshops, talks, webinars, and online self-care material. If they have well-being concerns, they are encouraged to raise them with their supervisors, school leaders, or superintendents. They also have access to peer support, such as their school's wellness ambassadors, and to free professional counselling through MOE's in-house counsellors or the Whole of Government Employee Wellness Programme. Members asked if the reduction of workload will be a key priority with KPI set and how well-being data informs staffing, performance evaluation, and retention policies. MOE takes a holistic approach to monitoring teacher well-being rather than using singular metrics like work hours. We regularly track a range of indicators, including job satisfaction, retention rates, and stress levels, and also engage with MOE teachers' unions to get feedback and suggestions. This approach allows us to ensure timely interventions to support teacher well-being. Apart from broad-based measures to support the profession, when we receive school-specific feedback, we will also implement targeted measures to address these issues in those schools. We are encouraged by the commitment shown by our teachers over the years, in spite of the growing complexity of the role. The mean annual resignation rates of teachers have remained stable at around 2 to 3% over the past few decades. TALIS 2024 also found that many of our teachers felt valued by society and see teaching as an attractive career choice. Based on the results from MOE's staff engagement survey last year, teachers' perception of work-life balance support were comparable to those across the wider public service. I thank members of this House, as well as members of the public, for their concern for our educators. Indeed, our individual and collective attitude towards educators will determine whether we can continue to attract and retain good educators. Beyond MOE and our schools, parents and other stakeholders also play an important role in supporting our teachers' well-being. By working collaboratively with schools, respecting educators, and maintaining realistic expectation about the responsibilities of teachers, parents can also help create an environment where our teachers can focus on what they do best, educating and nurturing our children. I would like to encourage parents, and in fact all of us, to recognise and appreciate our educators who dedicate themselves daily to nurturing young minds. As a society, let's cherish our educators' contributions each and every day. For when we honour those who teach our children, we strengthen the foundation upon which our nation's progress rests. Let me close by saying this. Having highly professional and caring educators who are deeply committed to shaping the lives of our children and youth is one of Singapore's reservoirs of strength. I thank all our teachers and allied educators for the good work you've done, seen and unseen, and I thank all parents and members of the public for your support for our schools and our teachers. We appreciate our teachers, and we are committed to working with you to nurture and guide our next generation.
Dr. Wan Rizal.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to get your permission to ask beyond two SQs because I've asked quite a number of questions.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, but keep it short.
Thank you. So I want to first appreciate Minister for sharing the efforts done by the Ministry to protect our teachers for their well-being and, of course, how they've been treated in schools all this while. I've gotten a number of ground feedback, including those with dialogues through the Singapore Teachers Union, where I'm an advisor for. And we've had very good conversations about how we want to improve teacher well-being and how we can protect them further. And while many support and welcome the efforts done by the Ministry, one pain point that keeps on cropping up is really workload. And we've heard from you how we've continued to monitor. But they have shared progressively that although things have changed, it's similar still because you move the pieces around, but the plate is still as much. So there's some concerns, and I'd like to ask further. You talked earlier about how you've done some research, and you've actually done, OECD is not ours, but we've done continually more to check on our teachers. Has the Ministry conducted any recent workload audits so that we can pinpoint exactly where is this pressure of workload really comes from? They've mentioned the bulk is the non-teaching part, but can we work on something to maybe reduce that further? You also mentioned the use of AI, which I believe has helped teachers a lot, but it also has added a layer of complexity to how they do things, and I wonder whether this could also be considered in us trying to reduce the workload. And going forward, can we explore a wide space where we actually put a guideline, a fixed guideline throughout the different schools to protect core teaching time? And of course, the teachers, you mentioned earlier, they teach a certain hours, but it's the bulk of whatever happens after that. That's the one that really needs some protection. And I hope we could find some model to help them in that regard. I think the STU has certain considerations too. So I think it's wonderful if we can work further on this. And you mentioned earlier that how we decentralise different schools will have different approaches, and I think that's necessary given the demographics of the different schools. But I think some schools would prefer to have Would you consider in this regard certain schools with slightly different needs? For example, they have a higher number of need for counselling. For example, they need more para-educators to be on board. Would the ministry consider giving some schools a lot more support in this regard? So I thank again, Minister, for sharing your efforts in protecting teachers' well-being. And I think I want to appreciate the teachers too. We are coming towards the end of the year, and I think we want to appreciate the good work they've done over the whole year. Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I thank the member for his series of questions, which reflects his deep engagement with the union, with educators, and with members of the public on the state of teaching in Singapore. Indeed, as I said, we don't just rely on TALIS, which is an OECD study. We have our own internal reviews on a regular basis on a whole variety of issues, including teacher workload. And the various measures that I outlined earlier, and I won't repeat all of them, are in reality a response to the identified areas of workload which we can moderate or adjust. So some of it involves hiring more, and we announced in July this year that we're going to ramp up the recruitment of teachers. I mentioned that over the years we have moved some responsibilities away from teachers towards allied educators like counsellors, SEN officers, administrators, vendors, and others. We've given schools resources to be able to bring in more vendors, if necessary, to help them to organize the activities. So those are the measures that are in response to a deeper understanding of the issues that the teachers face. And we are committed to continue this work and continue to implement new measures to help to allow our teachers that space to teach. And I would say that teaching today, if you ask any teacher, is a lot more holistic. It's not just about in-classroom teaching of a core subject or a hard subject. Even in the teaching of hard subjects, I think the member will recognize that we are infusing 21st century competencies, through the way that the teaching is carried through the field trips, through the studies, in subjects where appropriate, we infuse even the values education and CCE into some of these subjects. And so teaching being more holistic is no longer just found in the classroom, but also in CCA, in CCE, in a whole range of other activities that enable our teachers to mold and nurture our students holistically, not just cognitively, but effectively in terms of their emotional well-being, in terms of their skill sets, in terms of their executive functioning, in terms of their core of values that help them to navigate society and a future uncertain world. So that is one. And of course, by helping our teachers with tools to prepare their material, standardized material in SLS so they don't always have to prepare their own material. They can use some of that and adjust. AI tools, not just administratively to help them with admin workload, but also to help them augment their teaching, augment their marking, augment their ability to give feedback to their students. So I just want to refer the member back again to the various measures I articulated earlier. The member asked whether we give our schools more resources based on need. I think absolutely, right? There was a PQ some time back where members asked if schools can get more allied educators based on the profile of their students. For example, if they need more SEN officers or more counselors, we are able to redeploy the existing pool and steer them towards schools that may have greater need, whether secularly or for a season.
I see many hands. I'm only going to call members who have follow-up questions on this. So for those who did not, you don't need to raise your hands. Mr. Sean Low.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My SQs will be shorter than Dr. Wan Rizal's.
I will appreciate that. Dr. Wan's was pretty long.
Thank you. I thank the Minister for Education for his response. And I also want to declare that I'm the new advisor to the Singapore Teachers Union, as well as the Education Services Union. Now, it's a common refrain for many teachers that 1 hour in the classroom is more tiring than 1 hour in the office. I would venture to extend that to say that 1 hour in the classroom is much more tiring than also 1 hour in Parliament. And that's important because it's very concerning when the TALIS survey not just notes that teachers on average work 47 hours a week, but that number has not gone down over the last two seasons of the survey for the last decade. Whereas across Singapore, full-time workers, the average hours worked went down from about 47 hours to about 44 hours. So we should all be rightfully concerned about our teachers. To that end, I have two supplementary questions. The first one is for beginning teachers. Now, for beginning teachers, the survey noted that the proportion of teachers was low and that many were intending to leave. So my question to the minister is that, is the low proportion a feature of MOE's hiring policy? Is it because it is about low recruitment, or is it about higher attrition? And if it's the latter, what is the ministry doing about it? The second and last question is about non-teaching workloads. I fully agree with the minister that non-teaching workloads that lead to educational outcomes is important. Our teachers should do that, like CCAs. Because teachers don't just teach, they educate. But there's also non-teaching workloads that do not necessarily lead directly to educational outcomes. Procurement, for example, other administrative work. It seems like a perennial bugbear, notwithstanding the minister's assurance that the amount of resources to each school has gone up. I would like to ask the minister, why is this so? Is it because the workload has gone up more than the resources given to the schools? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I thank the member for his questions and for his concern for our teachers. I said earlier in my speech that both TALIS as well as our surveys show that while teachers' workload is high, it is indeed so. Working hours are long. It has been stable over past number of years. And we are working hard to focus our teachers' precious time on teaching holistically. And where possible, help them to be more productive and effective, help them to shed some of the administrative tasks and what the member calls non-core teaching functions to allied educators and others. So that work continues. So why is it that the number of working hours remains at this level and remains stable over the past number of years? I think members will also need to look at the context. Over the past few years, we have made a number of policy changes. Teaching, as I said today, is a lot more holistic. There is a lot more teaching beyond the classroom. There is CCA through which we teach leadership, sportsmanship, empathy, and so on, 21st century competencies. And in short, we have made many education-related moves over the years to strengthen our education system. So full subject-based banding only recently kicked in. A lot of things to be done in order to allow our students at secondary level to be able to learn at their pace. It creates work, indeed. It creates more work, but one which both that teachers recognize benefits our students. We implemented an EdTech Master Plan 2030 to help support our teachers and our students in learning using technology. Not just learning using technology, but learning with technology. We have been talking about AI in education as well, so that will, of course, create additional workload in terms of briefing, understanding, tinkering, learning, workshopping, practicing, mastering, and then we start to reap the results. We made changes to the PSLE system. That, of course, creates additional work, but again, for a purpose that supports the education system. We made changes to refresh our 21st century competencies and how it is infused into our lesson plans and in our curriculum and in holistic education. That, of course, also requires all our schools and all our teachers and all our departments, not just in HQ, but particularly in our schools, to make changes. And I can go on and on about all these things that have been done over the last few years that will increase the workload for a season, or some may also increase workload secularly, because education is more holistic, and our teachers also have to contend with a changing demographic of parents, different aspirations of our students. So all in, being able to keep workload at that level, despite doing all these important things, I think it's a reflection of how these measures have worked. But we need to do more in order to make further improvements to the workload and stress on our teachers. On beginning teachers, the member asked why the proportion of beginning teachers has fallen through the TALIS report. He cites that. Well, in 2018 to 2024, with falling cohorts and a maturing workforce, we had reduced recruitment, right, to some 650 to 700 teachers a year. But in order to fill in the gaps in certain subjects and to replace retiring teachers. But in July this year, we announced that we will ramp up recruitment of teachers going forward to some 1,000 teachers or more per year.
Ms. Valerie Lee.
Thank you, Minister. I have two supplementary questions. Has the Ministry actively conducted studies on other countries on how they manage this, on time management for teachers? And if so, which countries are they? And have there been anything that's implemented in Singapore? The second question is, what targeted initiatives are there for, are there being planned to reduce teacher attrition rates, particularly among our younger educators who may feel overwhelmed by workload and pressure? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I think through TALIS, we have a very useful, comprehensive teacher survey study across large number of OECD countries, and that is a very useful benchmarking tool. It's not just survey results, but they also go into some qualitative understanding of each jurisdiction. That, of course, complements our comparative study of other jurisdictions to continually improve. So that's a response to her first question. To the member's second question about beginning teachers' attrition, we support them through inductions, through mentoring in the first few years, through more supportive environments in school culture, focusing on professional development, to enable our beginning teachers to be able to navigate what will inevitably be a steep learning curve in teaching and, in fact, in all professions. We also need to accommodate and adjust and respond to a changing demographic with different aspirations of work and life. And so in that regard, having more flexible work arrangements, including part-time teaching, having various options for teachers to adjust their school day specific to their own responsibilities and specific to the school environment. I mentioned quite a number of them earlier. For example, coming to school a little later, there's nothing right up in the morning, leaving once their teaching and other duties are done, and so on. So we'll continue to find ways to make sure that our scheme of service continues to respond to a changing demographic.
Ms. Aniso.
Thank you, Speaker. The TALIS findings underscore how Singapore's teaching professions as innovative and respected, yet burdened by demands that could potentially erode long-term sustainability, particularly our early career educators. In this aspect, I have three SQs for the Minister. The first is whether do teachers' appraisal and progression factor for non-teaching duties, such as projects and CCAs. The second SQ concerns whether the Ministry have sought teachers' feedback on the demands that they face from students' parents, and whether the situation has improved with the introductions of the Parent Gateway Communication Platform, as shared by the Minister earlier. And finally, I'm not sure if I've catched in the various measures that Minister have shared earlier in relation to supporting the young budding teachers, whether it has also included or whether we are prepared to consider to include a scheme sort of like a mentorship between a senior and a more junior teachers as sort of like a buddy systems, encouraging and providing the necessary support and guidance to the young educators. Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I think I address a third question first. I did mention earlier that mentoring on top of induction programs and other PD professional development programs are in place for beginning teachers, or what she mentions as novice teachers. In terms of in response to a first question on appraisal, we do take into account the teacher's holistic work as well as performance, teaching, CCA, project, and so on. Right? In terms of whether we do surveys to understand, or surveys of teachers, or engage teachers to better understand the relationship between them and parents, the answer is yes. Through dialogues, through feedback from the Singapore Teachers Union and other teachers' unions, through our surveys and well-being surveys, we get a better understanding of, again, the changing demographic of parents today and their expectations of their children and teachers in school and out of school. And hence, as a result, you see changes such as the Parents' Gateway, implemented a number of years ago, school-home partnerships, as well as the MOE Charter, which sets out clearer boundaries and expectations and draw clearer lines between teachers and parents so that we can have a good, productive, holistic relationship and partnership for the benefit of our children.
Mr. Kenneth Tiong, I know you filed a PQ for this tomorrow.
Thank you, Speaker. Two excuses for the Minister. Firstly, what are MOE's target operational outcomes for AI adoption? Surely the Ministry must set a direction or goals, whether it's fewer hours, better allocation of time from admin to teaching, or something else. Without that, how do we measure whether AI adoption is achieving the desired outcomes? Second SQ, the Minister said that the workload has been stable at 53 hours per week. Does MOE believe that this is sustainable long-term? And if not, what is the target number of hours that MOE is working towards?
Minister Lee.
I thank the member for his questions. On AI, I mentioned earlier that AI tools, once you introduce them, there is work created when you introduce AI tools. In fact, there is work created when you introduce any productivity tool. At the NIE 70 conference, we also had AI experts from abroad who cautioned that when you introduce AI tools, there is hidden work that's created. Some of it is seasonal, some of it may be secular. But if these are tools that are productive in nature, that help save effort, reduce time spent on certain things in order for the teacher or the worker to be able to do more higher value added things and divert the time to things that they feel are more important, then the necessary precondition is that one gets familiar, understands, and then gradually masters and gets familiar with the tools. And then you start to reap the benefits. So there is a learning curve, there is an implementation curve, an operationalization curve before we can reap the benefits. And it's still early days. We are infusing AI into teaching, not just as a productivity tool, but in order for us as an education service to be able to teach our children what is AI, teach them how to use AI, teach them or enable them to learn with AI, and also to learn beyond AI. So all this does require change management over and on top of the school cockpit and suite of tools, AI and tech in nature that enable our teachers to do more with limited time. In terms of the workload, I mentioned in response to another member earlier that the stability of our working hours, not that we crow about it. I mean, certainly those are long hours and we need to continue to work collectively at it. And I think on both sides of this house, we all recognize and appreciate our teachers putting in all this effort for the benefit of holistic education of our children, but that there have been a whole series of education reforms and changes over the years. And a number of measures I mentioned earlier have helped to moderate the increase in working hours. But we are at it, we keep at it and continue to roll out reviews and changes that will help to moderate our teachers' overall working hours and their work-life balance.
Dr. Chu Pei Ling, I know you had a question for tomorrow's sitting as well.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have three supplementary questions. One, as schools differ in size and profile, how does MOE ensure that requests for additional support staff, such as administrative assistants or counsellors, are prioritised fairly and matched to the unique needs of each school? Two, are best practices from schools that have successfully reduced teacher workload being shared so that other schools can learn and adopt these methods? Three, how are insights from these regular workload reviews translated into practical adjustments at the school level so that teachers feel the impact directly in their day-to-day work? Thank you.
Minister.
I thank the member for three questions. The first, I think I've addressed that in a reply to one of the members earlier, that based on the specific needs and the profile of each school, if there are additional resource requirements, they can raise them to their superintendents and zonal directors and to HQ, and we will see how to provide support to help them address those needs. The second is best practices, certainly. Through the school's division, our principal school leaders and our superintendents share best practices, not just in terms of workload-reducing measures, but also pedagogical and teaching methods as well. We have networked communities of practice that enable our educators in different fields, as well as our administrators, to be able to share ideas and best practices with one another. So collectively, we improve as a system. And lastly, the member, I believe, asked how we ensure that these measures are properly implemented. Again, there are a range of supervisory measures, but ultimately, we give our school leaders autonomy and discretion to apply these measures to address needs and circumstances in their institutions.
Mr. Jackson Lam, did you raise your hand earlier? No. Okay. Dr. Hamid Razak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate the Minister setting the boundaries for clearer parent-teacher communication. However, boundaries can only do so much when it comes to behaviour change. I'm wondering if the Ministry would consider perhaps setting up frameworks to engage parents to set clearer communication guidelines, as well as perhaps shared communication platforms which parents can then engage with should they have concerns about their children. This is because practices may vary between teachers, and that might incite some degree of clear influence in terms of responding to parents, especially with their own personal phones for teachers. And parents might have overt concerns about their children, which may also vary between parent groups. So more than boundaries, if my question is whether Ministry has further measures or frameworks that can be useful to engage parents to enhance this parent-teacher communication. Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I thank the member for his concern about the anxiety of parents as well as the stressors on our teachers. Indeed, parents are the first teachers of our children, and our school teachers really work closely and seek to have a close partnership with our parents in order to ensure a more holistic education of our children. I mentioned earlier that we have an MOE charter that sets out, together with the school-home partnership framework. It's not just an internal document, it's also shared, particularly with parents, as well as with the public, so that we understand how to navigate that relationship. All of us are concerned about our children, but we also need to enable our teachers to perform their tasks and to be able to support their children in the class. And therefore, apart from these two guidelines and frameworks, We also have parent support groups. We have regular communication. It may vary from school to school, between school leaders, level heads, with parents, either en masse, face-to-face, person-to-person, or in a group, or virtually as well. So these are ways that enable a constant relationship, a constant communication between our schools and our parents.
Ms. Eliza Chen, I know, like Dr. Hamid, you also filed a PQ for this for Thursday's sitting. So
I did.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Speaker. I'd like to thank the Minister also for acknowledging the increasing complexity of a teacher's work. And to follow up, I'd like to ask the Minister, what safeguards are in place to ensure that internal workload surveys capture the full range of non-teaching duties, including event planning, meetings and administrative work? And second question, would MOE clarify whether teachers on the teaching track can achieve promotion to General Education Officer 5A and beyond based solely on classroom teaching excellence, pedagogical innovation and student mentorship without needing to chair committees or lead school-wide events and nationwide initiatives? Last question, of the teachers promoted to senior teacher or lead teacher positions at the schools, what proportion held non-teaching administrative portfolios, such as committee chairmanships, non-subject HOD positions or yearhead roles, prior to the appointments, as opposed to solely professional development portfolios? Thank you.
Minister.
The member asks three questions. For the second and third question, they are HR and statistics related. I would just encourage her to file a written PQ and we give you that data. Your first question is, member's first question is about safeguards to ensure that our MOE surveys capture accurately data. We have a large teaching workforce, primary, secondary, JC, centralized institute, and the surveys have a very high response rate, like something like more than 90% of our teachers respond, because they know that if they give us accurate information, it will enable our policymakers to better roll out and measures that support them. And so to help do this in our surveys, we have clear guidelines and instructions about how to itemize the workload for different kinds of work, both in classroom and outside classroom, pedagogical as well as administrative. We also provide examples, worked examples, that enable our teachers, particularly those who are doing surveys for the first time, to better understand what we are trying to capture. And of course, as with many surveys, there's also a catch-all. That means anything else, please let us know, so that we don't risk missing anything out. And of course, when you average it out, when you then look at it specifically, you then have a very good a set of data that enable policymakers to work on.
Moving on, we have already spent 1 hour, an hour, and we're only at question 5.